Welcome to Catholic Sports View on Immaculate Heart Radio. A look at the athletes and coaches who shaped the Trinity League. Exploring where athletics meets faith. Now, here is your host, Bob Gibson.
Welcome to a very special edition of Catholic Sports View. I'm Bob Gibson. Our show tagline is Exploring Where Athletics Meets Faith, and that's exactly what we've tried to cover during the first half year of 2016. Over the next hour, we'll look back at some of the special guests that have joined us here on the program, those that help shape the faith community that is alive and prospering right here in the world of local sports. Well, we kicked off our show back in August, and one of our first guests was longtime Santa Margarita athletic director and coach Rich Schaaf, who has been a major part of the Eagles campus literally from day one. Coach, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Bob.
I say coach right now. You're athletic director. You've been there since day one, since 1987. You've coached at the school for so many years as well. Gosh, take us back to 1987, and what was it like to start out at Santa Margarita in the early days?
Well, the thing that was tough was nothing existed down here before that. So when the principal at that time asked myself and Jim Hardigan to, you know, start the sports program down here, it was tough because we didn't have students. So we had to start having meetings down at the Catholic churches in the evening just to talk to kids about what Santa Margarita was going to be about and try to convince them, hey, it would be a good place to go to have your education, athletics, and a Christian environment.
It's such a beautiful school. I mean, one thing of our listeners out there have never been on campus. It's just a gorgeous campus. I have to think that was a selling point early on to bring kids on campus.
We had the original diagrams of the place, but really only a couple of the buildings were built. I remember the first summer that we did a summer camp, Jim, myself, Cindy Sunquest, and a couple other coaches, we put on an all sports camp of, like, I think 12 different sports. And a lot of facilities weren't even built yet. The gym wasn't done yet. The athletic fields were just getting put in. So, you know, we had about, I'd say probably about 87 kids in our camp. And, you know, we tried to do just kind of like a recreation thing, try to get them just excited about sports here at Santa Margarita.
Was there a thought of what kind of an athletic program you wanted to build from day one? Was that a conscious effort?
Yeah, Jim and myself, and with the help, like you said, Cindy, all three of us had coached female sports. And the one thing we wanted to do, which I think was different than a lot of the other schools we were at, was we wanted to treat every kid, male or female, that wanted to participate in sports as an athlete. And so we put as much emphasis on our girls programs as we did our boys program. And as you can see in the 90s, our girls had won two or three times the Commissioner's Cup, which is actually what CIF gives to the top male or female program in all of CIF. So, I mean, that was our biggest thing. We wanted a place where athletics, academics, and Christian environment help mold kids to be better people.
Yeah, being a Catholic school, obviously, that's an important endeavor. Did you have parents coming on looking for that sort of an education and that sort of a feeling around a campus?
I'd say 80% did. Other people, you know, because we have non-Catholics here, too. Some of them wanted just, you know, the academics or the athletics, you know, and what we said, no, you need to accept the whole part of it. We lost kids in the beginning because, you know, we wanted to be here for a specific reason. And so if you weren't willing to buy in to all the aspects that we wanted to teach a kid, and especially the final thing to be a better person, then this wasn't the place for you.
You had obviously been involved in athletics and education, you know, before you got to Santa Margarita. Was that part of the draw, the excitement of building something, you know, from the ground up?
Well, this would be my 41st year in athletics. I started at Ocean View High School back in the early 70s. And in my 30s, it was basically Jim Harding and I sitting on the beach of Hawaii. We both were at Modern Day that time. And all of a sudden, out of the blue, the principal at that time just said, hey, I'm going to start a new school, and you're going to be the basketball coach, athletic director, and Jim, you're going to be the head football coach. There wasn't a lot of discussion about it. Next thing you know, Jim and I are in the plans of helping build this place, and we actually came down for the groundbreaking ceremony and, you know, was there for the very first day that they, you know, stuck a shovel in the ground and turned over the dirt.
You mentioned Modern Day, and obviously for so long, the, you know, the gold standard here in Orange County for athletics, for Catholic education. How much shaping did you take from Modern Day and what you put into what Santa Margarita has become?
Well, the one thing we did was we tried to take all the good that we got from there. Just like any school, there's good things and bad things.
Sure.
And so we tried to take what was all good from Notre Dame and come down here. But the one thing, the biggest thing we did was Jim and I had, like I said, both had coached female sports. We wanted to make sure that the female athletes got as much attention as the male athletes, you know, whether it's the weight room, the track, the fields, the gym, you know. And this was when public schools, you know, were fighting for the Title IX thing, but we just accepted it. It didn't matter if you're a boy or girl, you should have been able to be an athlete if that's what you wanted.
Yeah, that's unique. Unfortunately, that's a unique thing. I know when I was in high school, you know, the girls always got the smaller gym and, you know, some of the facilities that weren't as good. And if they got any chance to be in the weight room, it was, you know, in off hours. Obviously, you know, female athletics has been a huge part of Santa Margarita. And I think one of the things that really got it on the map pretty quick.
Right. You know, and we had the Olympic girls. We had Amy Rodriguez still playing the Olympics and World Cup. And Caitlin Merritt last year and Katie McLaughlin tried for the Olympic trials this last summer. On the boys' side, you know, in the 90s, we had Carson Palmer, and we had the Finnerins. We've had great male and female athletes. And in a very, very short time, I remember, like, in the late 90s, sitting there with the Bosco AD, and he's looking at all our championships, and he goes, "This is unbelievable." I'm sitting there going, "Really?" He goes, "Yeah." He goes, "We have four or five CF championships." And at that time, we'd already have almost 30 CF championships. This is my 29th year here. We have over 60 CF championships, which is a credit to our kids, our coaches, our parents, you know, and the administration here. So it's been a great run.
A month later, we found out that you could pray the rosary with Vince Scully. Well, the legendary Dodger announcer has recorded a reciting of the Holy Rosary available for purchase. Show producer Jim Governale and I could hardly contain our excitement. A cool experience for any local sports fan. My 18th birthday, my grandmother handed me this letter. And it was addressed to me from Dodgertown, Vero Beach. And
oh, my goodness.
I opened it up inside, and she had written Vince Scully and Chick Hearn. Chick Hearn did not return the letter, but Vince Scully did. And just it just said, you know, "Dear Bob," and, you know, had a little advice for me. And here's, you know, your grandmother tells me you want to get into broadcasting. And, you know, I'm to a kid is a big baseball fan and a big Vince Scully fan. I mean, it was just, it meant everything. It's hand-signed. You know, I look back on it, and I think, wow, as a kid, you know, starting out in the business, how much that meant. To get that from a legend, you know, like Vince, that he would take the time to write me and just give a little, you know, words of advice, words of wisdom at the time. I mean, so I you know, many of us across Southern California have our stories intertwined with Vince Scully because he's been such a class act and just part of the fabric here of Southern California.
Well, exactly. And in fact, I saw that little note that you posted on your Facebook.
I did post it on my Facebook.
And I thought,
Facebook
how cool is that? But, you know, in the little LA Times write-up where they talked about, you know, the discovery of this audio, the writer was a guy named Jerry Crow, and Jerry spoke to Vinny in regards to the article. And at the time, Vin had not heard the audio that I given to the team, but he said something like, "I really appreciate it. I'll treasure it." And I was like, wow, Vinny's talking about treasuring something that I gave to the Dodgers.
Right.
But just in his humble way, Vinny was excited, not so much for getting his hands on the audio. He was excited because part of the play-by-play, part of the announcing on there was Jerry Doggett, another old Dodger broadcaster.
Absolutely.
And he and Vinny were such close friends, and Jerry's been deceased for 15 or so years. But Vinny was so excited that he was going to be able to hear the voice of his dear friend, Jerry Doggett. I mean, that's what meant the most to him.
How neat is that? Yeah, that's really something. Now, for fans out there that think, oh, this is it, we're not going to ever hear Vince Scully again, but there is still a chance to listen to Vince Scully. And for Catholics out there, maybe one of the things maybe people don't know about Vince Scully, you know, an Irish Catholic himself, and
exactly.
To attend Mass a lot at the stadium. And it's funny because Kevin O'Malley, who's the representative with Catholic Athletes for Christ, who first turned us on to this story we're about to tell, he told me there's nothing like going to Mass and hearing Vin do one of the readings.
Oh, my goodness.
Can you imagine? You know, from the book of Deuteronomy, I'm doing a bad Vin Scully impersonation. But
it's a long drive.
Can you imagine, right, hearing Vin do one or two of the readings at Mass? I mean, how fun would that be?
Wow.
But Vin, they got Vin to record the Holy Rosary.
Mm.
With all the mysteries and everything, and it's available for purchase now through Catholic Athletes for Christ. In fact, you can go to their website, catholicathletesforchrist.org/rosary, and it's available for purchase. You can download it, you know, on your different platforms, onto your phone, your devices, or whatever.
What a gift that would be!
And you can actually pray the rosary with Vin Scully. I mean, imagine that, right?
Amazing!
I mean,
that is awesome. Now, don't we have a clip from that we're going to get to play?
We do have a clip, so go ahead and listen to this.
The third joyful mystery, the Nativity. While they were there, the time came for her to have her child, and she gave birth to her firstborn son. She wrapped him in swaddling clothes and laid him in a manger, because there was no room for them in the inn. Now there were shepherds in that region living in the fields, keeping the night watch over their flock. The angel of the Lord appeared to them, and the glory of the Lord shone around them, and they were struck with great fear. The angel said to them, "Do not be afraid. For behold, I proclaim to you good news of great joy that will be for all the people. For today, in the city of David, a Savior has been born for you, who is Messiah and Lord. And this will be a sign for you. You will find an infant wrapped in swaddling clothes and lying in a manger."
Well, Jim, that, I mean, what more can be said? Woo. I mean, it makes me want to pray the rosary a little more often now.
That's a goosebump moment there, hearing Vinny doing the mysteries.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, it's really something he was happy to do. Just a little something to, you know, as Vinny, and we're not losing him. He's not going anywhere. He's just retiring. Really something special for Catholics out there. Once again, the website is CatholicAthletesForChrist.org/rosary. Go ahead and download it and listen to the great Vince Scully read you the rosary as you do your daily prayers. God bless everybody. When we come back, more of our year-end special look back at the best of Catholic Sports View in 2016. Stay with us here on Immaculate Heart Radio. Welcome back to Catholic Sports View. I am your host, Bob Gibson, and today we're looking back at 2016 in local Catholic sports, and nobody embodies that better than the longtime football coach at Modern Day High School, Bruce Rawlinson, a man who models the concept of faith meeting athletics.
And we start off our Modern Day special by visiting with the head football coach at Modern Day High School, and that, of course, is Bruce Rawlinson. Coach, thanks for making time for us.
No, I love it. This is important stuff, and obviously, you know, a longtime Catholic and a faith-based guy, I'm excited for this.
Obviously, that's an important aspect of what happens here at Modern Day. You know, we can start off with that. It is a Catholic high school. It is a faith-based community. Does everything really start from the ground up at that level?
Yeah, and it's a situation where, you know, you have a multitude. Probably, you know, you and I know that most of the kids are Catholic, but you have that percentage. I'm going to probably estimate maybe 30 in the football program. I can only talk about the football program that are non-Catholic. So you have to draw them in. It starts at the top. You know, I'm the example. I'm the guy that has to lead the charge. And I have my own certain way of doing it, my own certain beliefs, and how I present this package of faith. Because you and I know as adults, and me as an older adult, we can't do this alone. We cannot do this alone.
Absolutely.
And we are committed as teachers, as administrators here at Modern Day, to try to pass the message that there is a God, there is a Lord that watches out for us, and every kid's going to hear that message differently.
How much does it help that you've walked this journey yourself as a Modern Day student? You know, you've been in the shoes of where these kids are now. How much does it help you to be able to talk about that to a kid who you know, who may be struggling or you know, who's first coming into this program, which is a big deal?
Well, you know, it helps tremendously. But what helps the most is experience. 28 years as the head football coach at Modern Day. I've seen it all. Attending the high school and getting that initial burst. And, you know, I'm a Holy Family kid. But at that age, it's more, let's get the sacraments done with. I don't think you're really understanding much of anything. And as old as I am, you know, you looked at priests and you looked at nuns and you were intimidated by them. I don't think you were really hearing anything that they said. Then the growth process really begins. And I was fortunate. I had a deep faith-based individual, Dick Corey, as our head football coach. And we were surrounded by men. Joe O'Hara, who tragically passed away shortly after we left high school. But the O'Hara family. But Joe O'Hara was a powerfully faith-based man. And they served as the examples. So you start to assimilate. Again, it's not what they say, it's how they act. And people will say, Rawlinson's rough around the edges. But people that get to know me know where it all is centered around. That has helped tremendously as you experience life and the ups and downs of life. It's like I tell the kids, don't pray for victory because I don't really think God's listening, okay? Yeah, throw a word in that you don't get injured and maybe that helps. What you're praying for is the strength. What you're praying for is that, you know, in those critical times you make good decisions. But overall, just know that you're not doing this alone. And in a nutshell, Bob, is the fact that I just believe in daily prayer. And what my message is different. I tell them it's not about Hail Marys and Our Fathers. It's about, do you have 30 seconds in the morning? Do you have 20 seconds? Do you have a minute where you can't pop out of bed, hit your knees, and talk? You might have something coming up. You might have had a bad day the day before, but I usually try to pass a message that sometime in that evening, right before you shut her down, why not hit your knees and thank God for the blessings of that day and say, I need to go back and make some amends, you know? And obviously, as you can tell, that's where I'm at. The daily mass, communion, all of that is an extension of what I've learned, but it's prayer. You know, I've kiddingly said in games that I'm, you know, I've got my rosary beads in my pocket, but I actually do have them in my back pocket. Partly superstitious, partly because I'm going to stick my hand in my back pocket and say, if it be thy will. And again, I know that that's not going to have any bearing on it, but it reminds me that there's a bigger picture here that we're trying to accomplish. It's not just about winning and losing. It's about getting these men, when they get older, what are they going to teach their children? What personality are they going to present to people? Okay? Kids these days, Bob, they got a lot of temptations out there. And if you don't have something to fall back on, if you don't have your faith, if you don't have a belief in Jesus Christ to fall back on, you're fighting a battle by yourself. And that's really, there's my message right there. Don't fight anything by yourself.
During that special from Modern Day, we also visited with Tia Meza, who has gone from legendary Modern Day student athlete to now running the athletic department at her alma mater. You got to start here, obviously, at Modern Day as a player. Gatorade saw National Softball Player of the Year in 2000. When you kind of reflect back on that time now, how special was it to come through Modern Day as a student athlete and be able to achieve the heights that you achieved out on the softball diamond?
You know, Bob, it was such an amazing time to be a student and be an athlete of Modern Day. Really is a privilege. I enjoyed every moment of it. We had so much fun, so many memories. But to be the first Gatorade National Player of the Year at Modern Day when we had such a history of great athletes truly is a special place. And I've been fortunate to be here now when Katie Lou won 2 years ago. So it was nice to be here as, you know, then a faculty member and staff and work with her with that. So it's been great.
You were Tia Bollinger back then, for everyone who remembers your playing career here at Modern Day. You gave up, one earned run that whole season. Do you actually remember that? I know so many players remember the one thing that went wrong rather than the 100 things that went right in a year.
I actually do. It's funny. You always do kind of remember some of those things. It was against Rosary High School. Rosary Academy now. But it was just one of those plays where, I mean, one earned run is pretty spectacular, but you know, it was a great season. I had great support from, you know, teammates, and I was very lucky.
Now, your father played professional baseball, correct?
Semi-pro.
Semi-pro, okay.
Yeah.
So growing up, was baseball and softball always in the family?
Oh, definitely. I mean, from seven, I started playing softball, but I did other sports. You know, here in Modern Day, I was actually a three-sport athlete. Mm-hmm. I played water polo. I did a year of golf. You know, when both those sports came up as first years for females. So it was great to be able to do multiple things here in Modern Day, which we do have quite a few sport athletes now, but it's not the same as it used to be.
How special a place is this in Modern Day? I mean, you see both sides of it now. You're back here as a member of the faculty, but you know, when you really look at the entire campus, the entire experience, you know, how special is this school?
It truly is, you know, a place like no other. The family, the community, the type of care that our administration has, our faculty has, the parent involvement, it really does make this place one of a kind. And that's, you know, now as an adult, I see the value in it. As a student, I enjoyed it. That's what everybody had. Everybody had the same experience. And now I know that's really not the case, that you're really lucky if you get to have this kind of experience that we have here in modern day.
Is it important for you to work on that now as a member of the faculty to make sure kids who come here and are getting that experience that you did?
Oh, definitely. You know, I was the director of admissions marketing, now being the athletic director. The experience is really important to me because I know that not everyone's going to be the star athlete or get the 4.5 GPA. And it really, when you look back, the experience, the memories, the opportunities those students get, that's what the kids are going to hold on to and remember.
Your playing career, when it ended here, you ended up at the University of Washington. Why the choice to become a Husky?
The opportunity to play in the Pac-10 or the Pac-12 now, it was just, that's the best softball there was. So to play for, you know, Teresa Wilson was just an amazing experience to be on the West Coast, close to my family. Knowing that I was going to be, you know, on the West Coast and come to California a lot, it was really important to me. And the opportunity to, you know, compete for a national championship. So that's kind of some of the things I looked at, as well as, you know, a great education that I was going to get.
When did you know that you have this talent, you know, to play softball, that you were a special player, you know, somebody who was a cut above just the normal, you know, kid going out and playing softball?
You know, I was never really the most talented kid out there. I was always the kid who had to really work hard. I mean, I threw 5 to 6 days a week and practice, and a lot of that was my parents dragging me out there to practice. But at some point, you know, I knew if I worked hard enough, I was going to get the opportunities. And my work ethic is really kind of what helped me become, you know, the great player that I was.
After graduating, I think it was Cal State Northridge. You went and coached there a little bit. Did you think you might end up coaching, you know, at the college level? Was coaching something you wanted to do when you graduated?
When I was done, I kind of stepped away from softball. I went and did a couple different things. I tried to get into production and television, and I got married to my high school sweetheart, you know, modern day grad class of 99, and we started a family. And so that piece just didn't really work out. And so the call to come back to softball kind of opened up. And the opportunity to go, and I coached at Jay Sarah for a couple of years and then went to Cal State Northridge, and had the opportunity to work with college athletes and a program there that was, I really enjoyed the head coach. And so, you know, I really thought, okay, this is what I can do and be a softball college coach and go out recruiting. But for family, it's really difficult to be kind of out on the road. It's not just season, it's, you know, recruiting and all those kind of things. And so for me, a call came back to modern day and it was home. So I jumped at the chance to come back here.
You mentioned, you know, going down, spent a couple of years at Jay Sarah, coming here to modern day, faith-based communities, schools, you know, with a strong, you know, Catholic background. Was that important to you too? And did that help in your journey as well?
Definitely. I mean, to be able to work at a place where you can have your faith, it totally makes the atmosphere different. And I think it's really important having that faith in that community as part of your culture, as part of the environment, really does make a difference. And so it was important for me to be at a place where you can have all those things.
You coach softball here, you won a championship. Did you think that you would continue on coaching softball, or you know, obviously, you took some higher jobs here at modern day. Was that call to do something more, just a little more appealing than staying on and coaching athletics?
I love working with the kids, and I miss, and you know, kind of being able to go up now and be the director of athletics. I miss the interaction with the student athletes, but I now have the opportunity to affect more student athletes, which I think is really what I was looking to do. You know, the day in, day out with my girls, I treasure those moments. But now it's kind of an opportunity to affect more people, which is what I'm looking forward to.
Another quick break, and then much more from our special look back at the best of Catholic Sports View. Keep it tuned right here to Immaculate Heart Radio. Thanks again for joining us here on Catholic Sports View. I am Bob Gibson, and we met some inspiring people in 2016, including Santa Margarita student-athlete Ryan Hallisey, who had big ideas of how to help some younger athletes while attempting to earn the title of Eagle Scout.
Explain to us how you got the idea for this basketball camp and the reason behind it.
It all started a couple years ago when my sister attended a soccer clinic at Trevico High School. And I decided that, oh, I want to do my Eagle Scout project involving sports. So a couple years later, my old school, Sarah Catholic, had a tuition assistant luncheon. And I was looking at some of the schools that participated in it, and I saw St. Joseph's, St. Anne's, and the School of Our Lady. So that's how I picked out the three schools that were part of it. And then I've been playing basketball for a very long time, since about first grade. So I wanted to kind of incorporate basketball into my project too. So then I decided I wanted to do a basketball clinic.
Yeah, you're a basketball player at Santa Margarita. As I mentioned, you're a freshman over with the Eagles. So basketball's a big part of your life, obviously.
Yes.
You mentioned it's your Eagle Scout project. Now, for those who aren't familiar with the Boy Scouts and Eagle Scout projects, they're usually very intense, maybe for lack of a better word, but they're always a huge undertaking. How long did it take you to kind of formulate the plan and this is what you really wanted to do?
Well, it took me a really, really long time. I really started planning at around maybe June, and I've been sending countless emails, spending lots of hours taking notes and coordinating with the schools and my volunteers to try to pick out dates and work with my costs that I had to spend, things like that. But yeah, I've spent a lot of time working on this project.
Obviously, I would think your parents helped you out too. Is it a process where your troop leader or somebody within the Boy Scouts, you have to kind of run the idea past? And is there an approval process?
Yes. Well, I have to get it approved by first my troop, do a presentation in front of some of the adults, including my troop leader and some of the other parents that are part of my troop 818. And then after that, I had to meet with another man, and he was in charge of approving the Eagle Scout projects in just our area. So I had to meet with him, and he agreed that it was a good idea, and he let me do my basketball clinic, yes.
Explain to us the criteria that go into an Eagle Scout project like this. What has to be done? What are the criteria to kind of meet?
Well, there really aren't very many requirements. Mainly, it just has to benefit your community. A lot of people usually believe that you have to be building something, because that's what a majority of the Eagle Scout projects are. And when I was going into this, I kind of wanted to do something different than what most other people did. So that's why I came up with the basketball clinic. But really, there aren't really many other requirements besides that has to really benefit the community.
Are there some coaches that you've had over the years or currently that kind of helped you put together the basketball aspect of the camp?
Yes. I was on a club team for a couple years, the RSM Lightning, and I invited two of my coaches, Coach Ramirez, who is the athletic director at Tesoro High School, and Coach Dawson, who is the assistant coach. And also, I invited my current freshman coach, Coach Walker, and I also invited my middle school coach, Coach Cunningham. I also invited my two cousins who are also pretty good basketball players, and they played for Tribuco High School.
We're talking with Ryan Hallisey. He's a freshman at Santa Margarita High School and put on a basketball camp for youth who may not be able to otherwise maybe afford the chance to come out and be a part of a camp. Ryan, tell us how you identified the schools that you wanted to kind of include in this and how you contacted the schools and what was the reaction on the other end of the phone there?
Well, like I said before, each year my old middle school, Sarah Catholic School, has a tuition assistance luncheon. And I was looking through the list, and I kind of wanted to do something in Santa Ana. I wanted to kind of do it in an area where the kids would be able to benefit more from it. So then I chose the three schools of School of Our Lady, St. Joseph's, and St. Anne's. And I sent them an email to see if they were interested. And then once they accepted my request, I met with them in person.
And what did they say? I mean, this is kind of a thing that came out of the blue for these schools. How was it received by the principals or the directors of the schools?
Well, they were all very, very excited. They seemed like they were very happy that I thought of their schools. I think that they were pretty excited for my project.
So what exactly the planning process? What did you want to do? What were the things you wanted to kind of go over as far as, you know, the criteria or, you know, the curriculum at the camp?
First off, I knew I wanted to have a scrimmage station just so the kids could put all their skills to the test. And I just kind of was thinking of all the main parts of basketball. So I had a ball handling station. I had a defense station. I had a passing and rebounding station. And I had, I think that's it. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, no, those are pretty much the major aspects of basketball, of the sport. You mentioned that you played for a long time. You know, how advanced is your game? Were you actually able to become, you know, one of the instructors here at the camp?
I failed to mention earlier, too, that the other requirement for an Eagle Scout project is that you can't actually do any of the work at the Eagle Scout project.
Okay.
Because they wanted you to – the main purpose of the Eagle Scout project is to show that you've learned leadership over the years in scouting. So, unfortunately, I was not able to actually teach the kids myself. So I was just kind of walking around through the clique, making sure that all the coaches were teaching all the drills that I had assigned them, making sure that everything was running smoothly, just things like that. And I had also assigned some of my former teammates and current teammates to help the coaches demonstrate the drills.
Well, we also crossed paths with a semifinalist for the National Merit Scholarship. Aiden Crowley is also an accomplished tennis player at Rosary Academy and another example of the impressive young people matriculating through our local Catholic campuses. And your team is off to a pretty good start. Are you happy with the way the team and you're playing so far this season?
Yeah, so far we're actually at a 6-2 record. We just started off our league on Thursday against Jay Sarah, and we're playing pretty well so far. My doubles partner last year was a senior. She just graduated, but my new doubles partner is a freshman, and we're getting along really well, so that's been great so far.
How has your career gone, your high school career? I mean, are you happy with the results and what tennis has meant to you here in your high school career?
Yeah, so I've been on freshman year, I was on JV, but then sophomore year, I went to varsity, and I think being on a small, close-knit team has really taught me the value of, like, teamwork and making sure that we're all working together to do the best that we can.
You know, we were talking golf last week on the show, and tennis is very similar in the way that it's sport played individually and doubles as well. But, you know, in singles, it's individual, but it's a team concept as well. You know, you're earning points, you know, for the team. Do you enjoy the singular nature of it, but then also the team aspect?
Yeah, I kind of like it. It's actually an interesting interplay because normally when you think of tennis, you only think of like a singles, a one-person sport, but actually it's a lot more team building than you would think. We actually went to the Newport paddleboarding harbor, and we got to do like some team building activities, and we also most recently went to the beach together. So even though on the court we're playing individually, we're able to kind of come together and build our team building that way.
As I imagine you are one of the leaders on the team, what does that mean to help, you know, build the camaraderie between all the girls?
So I'm a team captain this year, and it's kind of helped because I'm able to lead the stretches, and we also do fun games like Rip Your Face Off and Queen of the Court, so I'm able to kind of remind people what's going on and what we're doing.
Do you see yourself as somebody who leads by example? Are you more vocal? Do you like to you know, sit down with maybe some of the younger girls and talk with them and maybe teach them as well?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to think that I'm able to kind of find my voice through tennis, and especially with having three freshmen on our team actually this year, I've been able to kind of connect with them and help them learn what it's like to be both a student and an athlete at the same time.
You guys play in the tough Trinity League, and the Trinity League is tough in any of the sports. How does the rest of, you've only seen one team so far in Jay Sarah, but how do you think the league stacks up for you guys?
So this year, I think we're actually going to do really well. A few of our new freshmen on the team have been playing since they were really young, so they've had a lot of practice under their belt, and they're ready to kind of help out the team, and hopefully we can do pretty well this season.
How long have you been playing the sport? You know, what got you first interested in tennis?
Actually, the cool thing about Rosary is I had never really played tennis before, so I was able to come in and on like the summer practice squad, I learned what to do, I learned the basics, and through that I've been able to kind of become one of the team leaders.
So what piqued your interest in the sport?
I knew I wanted to play a sport in high school because I wanted to be both a student and an athlete. And to me, I kind of liked kind of what we were talking about before, how you can play on your own but then also bring it back to the team.
Did you have any other background in any other sports that you brought with you to this?
I did like soccer before when I was in 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, and that was definitely a team sport, so I was able to kind of take that and apply it to my tennis.
As you look at schools, you know, obviously when you get into high school, why Rosary? Why did you pick Rosary? What was it about this school that appealed to you?
So I think the reason that I fell in love with Rosary is the opportunity, and it's really something that you can't get anywhere else, because at Rosary we have a student body of about 415, but we have over 220 leadership opportunities. So over half the student body gets to be involved in leadership. And being a small school, we're able to kind of come out of our comfort zone and embrace our true royal.
Obviously it's a faith-based community. Catholic education, was that important to you as well?
Yes, especially I know during the high school times it's easy to kind of get caught up in the busyness and get stressed out, but being at a Catholic school, I'm able to come into the chapel and take some time away and really connect with God and keep me grounded.
How does your faith help you on the court as well when you're playing or, you know, when you're involved in tennis?
So usually on the tennis court, I sometimes pray for like a sense of calm to come over me, and that helps me, especially because tennis is such a mental game. I'm able to kind of find my ground in God.
So what are you studying? What are the things that we'll talk about, the scholarship, your big opportunity here as a National Merit Scholarship semifinalist, but what are the things you're studying here at Rosary? What are the things off the court that have interested you as well?
So at Rosary, over the past 4 years, I've had kind of a rigorous curriculum, and being involved in so many AP classes has been a lot of time. But the good thing is that the teachers and your fellow students are really here to support you along the way.
Do you enjoy the fact that you mentioned it's a small student body. Do you enjoy that fact that, you know, this is a small-knit community, and, you know, it's not the large, you know, sprawling campus that maybe some other places?
Yeah, especially the small community is really helpful in the classroom, because instead of having like 40 students and one teacher, it's a lot of my classes, like my AP Physics class is only 15 people. Last year I was in AP Biology, that was 9 people. And so it's a really, it's an intimate connection between like a student-teacher relationship, and we're able to communicate better and participate more in class.
One final break and we'll wrap things up on our special year-end edition of Catholic Sports View. We'll be right back. Thanks so much for joining us on this look back at 2016 in local sports here on Catholic Sports View. Now, I've enjoyed the opportunity to meet so many great athletes, coaches, and contributors in 2016, and we'll finish with two of those inspiring coaches. Martin Dugard has built an outstanding cross-country program at J. Sarah High School, all the while helping to author books that have sold in the millions worldwide. And coach, odds are you're a coach, you wear a lot of different hats, but odds are right now that almost everybody listening out there may have a book in their possession with your name on the front cover. And people might be thinking, Martin Dugard, yeah, I've heard that name before. And it's probably because many people do have your books. You've written 5 different books with TV personality Bill O'Reilly. How did you get into authoring books in the first place?
It's a long story, but let's put it this way. I took my time finishing college because I just didn't know what I wanted to do. And I got a corporate job. And when I finally finished, and I was just miserable, and I'd always liked to read, I'd always liked to write. And so I went to a career counselor after 2 months into my corporate career. I took all these tests, and she said, have you ever thought about being a writer? And that was all I needed. You know, that kind of gave me permission. So I began writing magazine articles on the side. I started off, this is 25 years ago, I started off writing for small running and triathlon publications. I worked my way up the magazine world to, you know, Sports Illustrated and Esquire and GQ. And then at some point, I left the corporate world and became a full-time writer, and I kind of moved into books because my kids, I've got 3 boys, and they became old enough that it wasn't great for Dad to be traveling, you know, 4 months out of the year to chase these magazine stories. So I've been writing books. My first one was 1998, and I started off in sports. You know, I covered the Tour de France for 10 years during the Lance Armstrong days.
That had to be an experience.
Oh, man, I got to tell you, if you ever get the chance to go to the Tour, even just for a week, it's not just about the bike race. It's about the history and the scenery, the wine and the cheese, the food. It's the whole package. It is just the most transcendent. It is just wonderful. I kind of miss it. I'd like to go back one of these days. So then, you know, everybody asked about the books with Bill O'Reilly because I began writing history, and that's what cross-country ties into it, because the team was in Mammoth for our annual summer training camp, and I got a call from my agent in New York asking me if I could be in New York the next day, the day after that, the day after that for lunch. He had a client who wanted to talk to me about doing a book. He wouldn't tell me who it was. So I literally left the team under the control of my assistant coaches. I drove, you know, through the night to the airport, made my way to New York, had lunch with Bill. We hit it off, and we started doing history books together, and it's been a great collaboration.
By last count here, over 10 million copies in print of, Killing Lincoln, Killing Kennedy, Killing Reagan. I know I'm missing one or two here. Fascinating looks into history. I imagine it takes just a whole lot of research to get into these stories that we all think we know really well, but you guys have been able to really dive deeper into the subject matter.
That is how I spend my days. I coach in the afternoon, and I research and put stuff together all day. You know, that's the trick. The trick is to not just tell the stories in a way that makes you turn the pages and to reinvent history in such a way that it's not the dry old history book that everybody falls asleep reading, in which I do too. I love history books that make history come alive. So that's our goal, is to, like when we did Killing Jesus, you know, everybody thinks they know the Jesus story. Everybody knows the Gospels. You know, you go to Mass and they do the Gospel reading. Well, what we sought to do with with killing Jesus was give a context. Talk about the Romans, you know, persecuting the Jews and you know, the timber of the times in a way that people didn't just understand the Gospels, but they appreciated the Gospels. And so when you read them, you really get the idea of how horrible it was and how brutal it was to live in that time and the horror of the crucifixion itself and you know, what Christ sacrificed for us. You know, it's a big thing. And, you know, in the fact that even they would not have called him Christ. And Christ was a term that was affixed later. He was Yahweh or he was Jesus. You know, it was a different thing.
Is there, and we're visiting with Martin Dugard, the cross-country coach at J. Sarah High School and author as well. Is there a certain catharsis or something involved in the writing that is similar to that in running?
They're both a process. They're both a discipline. And I get a lot of satisfaction out of both of them. When I go for a run, I tend to get lost. And by lost, I mean I just kind of, you know, my problems all slip away. I just get so relaxed out there on the trail in particular that I just, you know, miles can fly by without me not even noticing it. And it's the same with I write. You know, I mean, I wrote for 4 or 5 hours this morning. You know, I could still be doing it. The time just flies by. Once you lose yourself in it, just that you get that sense of ease and that sense of focus, that laser-like focus that just kind of carries you. It's very addictive. I will say there's got to be some kind of dopamine, just like in running, that makes it so addictive.
Well, I see a parallel because you mentioned the team aspect of cross country, even though it's an individual event that you're doing. Much as in your writing, you've written articles and books by yourself, but then it's a collaborative process when you're co-authoring the book with Bill O'Reilly. So is it rewarding on both sides of it, being able to do it yourself and then doing it as a team member as well?
I have to say that until I wrote with Bill, I never saw myself as a collaborative, creative person. And I think we work so well together that it's just there's such a good back and forth that it makes it really fun. But sure, it's a good point because, you know, back in the day when I ran cross-country competitively in high school and college, that's the one thing you miss when the season's over is you go back to doing your runs by yourself, that solitary environment. And, you know, have that quiet thrill of having teammates around you and kind of bumping off you and you that back and forth, it makes it so special.
We ended 2016 by meeting with Daryl Miller. He's part of the legendary Miller family that also includes Basketball Hall of Famers brother Reggie and sister Cheryl. Daryl is a former Angels player and executive who has built the MLB Urban Youth Academy into a dream academy for local baseball players.
Well, I grew up Baptist and, you know, converted was baptized early and gave my life to Christ when I was 16 and was active in the youth program and sang in the choir and the youth choir and traveled and all that kind of stuff with my older brother Saul, who's in the Airmen of Note for 28 years. And so we were active in the church. And then went to Cal Poly Pomona, and that's where I ended up playing baseball. I thought I was a really good football player and got recruited to a couple places, went to Arizona State and SC and a couple other places, but ended up playing baseball and played for a really good holy man named John Scolinas. And it really impacted me. And I thought, you know, he never cursed, never drank, never smoked, and we couldn't do any of that at Cal Poly. And he influenced a lot of people in such a positive way. He's that kind of guy. And he's Catholic. And so that led me to at least being a little bit more open, because being from that the other side, you're looking at Catholics in a whole different way than I look at Catholics now, obviously, because I became one. And then I met my wife, who was Catholic, and tried to bring her away from the church and get her to convert to the born-again movement. And she wouldn't leave. And then Father Al Baca invited us to start a Bible study at our church here in Orange County. And then we started a young adult group and a Bible study. And then the next thing you know, 3 years later, I started really looking at the Catholic faith in a whole different way. I saw so many holy people, so many people that really loved Christ, that spoke the way I spoke, you know, praise the Lord. They really loved Christ. And then what really kind of cemented it for me was the Eucharist. When I looked at the truth of the Eucharist and I started getting these Scott Hahn tapes, because I really wanted to find out what the Eucharist meant, it seemed like I really wanted to receive Christ. And it reminded me of the day that I went forward, you know, to receive Christ. In the Protestant faith, that's what you do. You go forward in front of everyone and you receive Christ. And that, for me, mimics, and it really, in my opinion, is the Eucharist. Like, we're going and we're rededicating our life, if you will. We're receiving Christ as our Lord and Savior every single Sunday. And for Catholics to understand that, for me to understand that. That's to not be flippantly understanding that we're basically going, yes, I accept you into my heart as my Lord and Savior. And that's what we do when we receive the Eucharist, when we eat the bread and we drink the blood, that we're reconsecrating ourselves to that conversion moment. And that's why I became Catholic. And then the rest of it fell into place with Mary and the Pope and why we need that magisterium. And we have to understand, you know, the focus of the church of, you know, the truth is not debatable. Truth is truth. It's not like, it doesn't change. And that's the piece that I think reminds me a lot of baseball. The rules don't change. You know, we don't widen home plate
right.
So people can throw strikes. And, you know, we don't change the rules on sanctity of life because people decide that they don't think it's not really life. Our rules don't change. And that's what's important to me as I've progressed in my faith is that this is a great church. And I'm just blessed that I had the courage to really become Catholic.
Seems like baseball is the one sport where it's okay to show your religious side or if you have a belief. And we don't see that so much in maybe some other sports or it's kind of shunned. You know, Tim Tebow was kind of put down for expressing his beliefs. But it seems like baseball is really kind of the one sport where you're allowed to have religious beliefs. And there are a lot of Catholics within the sport of baseball.
Oh, absolutely. We started a group called Catholic Athletes for Christ, and baseball's, there's a lot of guys. But there's a lot of guys in football, too. I think, but the reason there's so many people that profess their faith in baseball, especially, is because it's a hard sport. It's failure-ridden. It's like life. And you know what? Baseball, you need an anchor. You know, when things are going bad, you know, if you have no anchor, you're in trouble. And in life, when things are going rough, you need an anchor. And that's why baseball really mimics everyday living.
We all know an 0-for-25 slump in life.
Yeah, we all know that slump. And we can get in these slumps in life, you know. You know, like I told you, we've had a bunch of things happen to our family. Our kids got an accident. This happened, that happened. And you're like going, wow, man, it's raining pretty hard. So we all have those slumps. And without an anchor, man, you're in trouble. And that's why I think it's really important to have that anchor, if you will.
Yeah. So obviously you come from the famous Miller family out in the Riverside area. Your brother's Reggie, your sister is Cheryl, for those who don't know. How do three professional athletes come out of the same family? What was in the water out there? What did your parents do right? They were able to raise, you know, such a great family.
You know, I think it was just my dad really wanted us to use sports. My mom and dad, they said, you know, use sports to get your education because we can't afford to send you to college. And so we just tried to be good enough at something to get to college because we knew there was no other option. You know, you had to go to college if you're in our family. I think that's how the rest of it was a little bit of this hard work and individual determination thing. Cheryl was a gifted athlete. So we all were pretty accomplished, at least at collegiate level, and used like whatever our talents were to get to school and get our scholarship and then move on with it.
Well, I want to thank everyone who has helped make Catholic Sports View a reality this year. Bishop Kevin Vann for leading this great diocese, Director of Communications Ryan Lindgren and his great staff, my right-hand man and producer Jimmy G, and of course all of you who have graciously taken the time to listen to the great stories we love to tell you right here on Catholic Sports View. I'm Bob Gibson, and we look forward to what 2017 will bring us, where athletics meets faith. Thanks again for listening. This is Catholic Sports View on Immaculate Heart Radio.